WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Jason Croft, who has, by the way, good taste in music. With the Champaign County unemployment rate peaking in 2010 before a steady decline, finding a job now may be a more promising experience than it was 2 years ago. But the rising costs of basics such as food, shelter, and medicine have left many families still struggling to make ends meet. Just having a job may not be enough. Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access has the second of three reports.
When Tawana Lee's family suddenly grew by three, life became tougher financially. The 37-year-old nursing assistant began fostering her three nephews in 2004, pushing the family size from two to five.
I remember, like, at one point, I was living from paycheck to paycheck.
Lee and her husband live in a two-bedroom apartment in Dobbins Downs, a mixed-income area in North Champaign. Lee was making between $36,000 and $40,000 a year while working nights at the Champaign County Nursing Home. Despite her good-paying job and the supplemental income from the state for the children's needs, meeting expenses was still a struggle. Lee says it would have been better if she had qualified for federal supplemental food assistance, or what is more commonly known as a link card.
At the time, I struggled a lot, like with food, because I wasn't getting a link card, so I was buying everything with cash. And then, like, so I would resort to, like, the little food pantries and stuff like that they had, which helps some.
To qualify for the benefit in Illinois, a family of five can make no more than $2,900 a month on average, according to 2012 guidelines. Lee was making just above that. But the cutoff for that benefit may not reflect rising costs. In September, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported a 2% increase in the cost of food over the past year, with larger increases in housing and medical care. The increases in the cost of basic expenses have pushed more people to seek help from food pantries. Nathan Montgomery, executive director of Salt and Light, says now about 30% of the food pantry's clients are new families.
We've seen a lot of people with who have never been to a place like Salt and Light before, who now find themselves in line for food and clothing and things like that. And it really has to do with how the economy turned and the jobs losses that we saw and where we saw them really kind of, I think, thrust people into positions they'd never experienced before.
Lee was still living paycheck to paycheck until a friend helped her work out a personal budget. Since then, Lee says, she has prioritized how she spends her money.
I had to regroup. And do what's important and what's not important has don't have to be here. Like cable, since the kids are not here, I don't see a necessity.
Lee's nephews were reunited with their mother this past August, and Lee's family became a two-person household once again. She now is considering returning to school to finish a bachelor's degree in nursing. But the cost is expensive, and Lee says she would have to give up work and take out loans to afford the degree. And as of now, Lee doesn't see the benefit to that.
I mean, do I really want to go taking out a big $40,000, $50,000 loan?
And a job may not be guaranteed. The unemployment rate in the Champaign-Urbana area has fluctuated over the past year, with August showing a slightly lower unemployment rate than in July. Montgomery says that for the clients Salt and Light serves, jobs are still needed.
I don't care what the economic indicators are, what the markets are saying. The bottom line for most of the people that we're serving is all about jobs. You know, are there jobs? Are there places for them to get employment that is meaningful, that is actually going to help sustain them? And frankly, we just haven't seen that growth.
For some, though, a job is simply not attainable. For the 15% of households in Champaign County that make less than $10,000 a year, life has grown harder since the recession. Tune in tomorrow to hear why. For Illinois Public Media, I'm Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access.
This story was funded by the Marguerite Casey Foundation. For more information on the story, visit cu-citizenaccess.org. In the state of Michigan, voters next month will decide whether to force that state's utilities to garner at least 25% of their annual retail sales from renewable sources by the year 2025. Sounds like a straightforward enough question, but voters are seeing, hearing, and reading all sorts of competing claims about such a move's cost and impact. Rebecca Williams of Michigan Radio has this report.
It's a sight strange enough to draw a crowd to this port on the western edge of the state on Lake Michigan's shore. Workers are slowly inching a 22,000-pound wind turbine blade down from a ship that just arrived from Germany. The blades are heading for a new wind farm in the middle of the state.
That's gonna be good!
Although these wind turbine parts are imported, there are more than 30 companies in Michigan making components for turbines. One of the reasons that industry is growing is a state law that requires Michigan utilities to generate 10% of their electricity from wind, solar, and other renewables by 2015. But some people think that doesn't go far enough.
Michigan currently gets 60% of its electricity from coal. 100% of that coal is imported from other states.
Mark Fisk is the spokesman for Michigan Energy, Michigan Jobs. His group is behind a proposal on next month's ballot that aims to bypass the legislature. Proposal 3 will ask voters to amend the state constitution and bump the standard up to 25% by the year 2025.
The big utility companies, the big oil companies, and the big energy companies have enormous clout and influence in our state legislature. And our bipartisan coalition made the determination early on that the only practical way to expand Michigan's use of renewable energy was to let the people decide.
Clean energy groups back the proposal. So does the Michigan Nurses Association, which says the proposal would lead to cleaner air. Organized labor groups are split on the issue. Many chambers of commerce across the state are opposed to it. So are the state's two biggest utilities.
They want to lock it into the Constitution and force you to give them $12 billion.
Both That's campaigns have powerful PR firms behind them, and they've been blanketing the airwaves.
It'll create 94,000 Michigan jobs and spark new businesses.
The campaigns are attacking each other, saying their opponents' claims about jobs and cost are overblown. But the real issue for many is whether energy policy should be placed in the Michigan Constitution. Megan Brown is the spokeswoman for Clean, Affordable, Renewable Energy for Michigan. It's the group leading the effort to defeat the measure. She says energy policy needs to be debated by the legislature, not voters.
We aren't opposed to renewable energy or to growing renewable energy here in Michigan. But this process isn't the way to get there.
This approach is unusual. Glenn Anderson is with the National Conference of State Legislatures. He says 29 states require utilities to get some of their electricity from renewable sources. But if Michigan voters approve this measure, it would be the first time a specific energy requirement would be put into a state constitution.
One of the concerns with amending the constitution is the ability of the legislature to change the language if needed.
Anderson says recently there have been efforts to weaken or repeal these standards in 9 states. So putting them in a state constitution can safeguard against that. In fact, if Proposal 3 passes in Michigan and people wanted to change it later, voters would have to approve another constitutional amendment to do so. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Williams in Ann Arbor.
WILO programs are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, presenting Classics 1 Resurrection, featuring works by Brahms, Mozart, and Beethoven, on Saturday, October 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets may be purchased online at www.krannertcenter.com or through the Krannert box office.
The words are by poet William Blake.
I was angry with my friend.
The voice is singer Martha Redbone.
I told my wrath did end.
Blake meets Appalachia today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 11th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of a physicist, Lewis Fry Richardson, born Northumberland, England, 1881, the first to apply mathematical techniques to predict the weather accurately. wrote a book about it in 1922, Weather Prediction by Numerical Process. The problem with the theory was that it took him about 3 months to predict the weather for the next 24 hours. It had to wait until the advent of the computer to work. It was on this day, 1962, Pope John XXIII convened the first session of the Second Vatican Council, Vatican II, as a result of which Catholics were allowed to pray with Protestants and go to weddings and funerals in Protestant churches. Priests were encouraged to perform Mass facing the congregation, and priests were allowed to perform Mass in languages other than Latin. It's the birthday of the novelist Elmore Leonard, New Orleans, 1925, started out writing westerns in the early 50s. His first novel, The Bounty Hunters, came out in 1953. Then, when the market for westerns seemed to be drying up, he set out to write crime novels. The first, The Big Bounce, came out in 1969 after it was rejected by 84 different publishers. Almost all of his books since then, including 52 Pickup, Get Shorty, Out of Sight, and most recently Djibouti, have been bestsellers. It's the birthday of François Mauriac, born in Bordeaux, France, 1885. Most of his novels set in Bordeaux became famous for his book A Kiss for the Leper. François Mauriac, who said, "I believe that only poetry counts. A great novelist is, first of all, a great poet." And it's the birthday of the founder of the YMCA, George Williams, 1821, Dulverton, England. He went to London, got a job in a draper's shop, and was horrified by living conditions. Young men coming in from the country find a job working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and their only entertainment, whatever they could find on the streets of London, streets filled with gamblers and drunks and prostitutes. He wanted to create a place where they could hang out and make friends and find recreation, and that was the first YMCA. Here's a poem for today by Richard Newman, entitled Bless Their Hearts. At Steak and Shake, I learned that if you add Bless Their Hearts after their names, you can say whatever you want about them and it's okay. My son, bless his heart, is an idiot, she said. He rents storage space for his kids' toys. They're only 1 and 3 years old. I said, my father, bless his heart, has turned into a sentimental old fool. He gets weepy.